Hello, everybody. It's time for my podcast. Not the podcast yet, though. I've got some plugs. Don't run from them. All right, people. If you live in LA, this Saturday night, February 7th, 8 p.m. at the Hollywood Improv, I am performing. I am hosting and headlining my show, Jen Kirkman and Friends. Other performers will be on the show besides me. For more information, go to jenkirkman.com. Click on tour dates. I want you guys to come to this. You go, you're never in L.A. That's right. I barely perform in L.A. I won't be doing really any other shows in L.A. except not any headlining shows like this. So call 323-651-2583. Tickets are $15. Valentine's Day. Weekend. Thursday, February 12th through Saturday, February 14th. Five shows at Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia. But listen to me. I've been to Philadelphia 90 times. I'm already getting statues. People want me to go see the Rocky statue. You think I give a fuck about the movie Rocky? I've seen the statue. I've been to Philly. I got it. I'm coming to perform, not sightsee. So why don't you sightsee me? Ticket $16 to $24. What are you going to do? Some other, have dinner with your loved one? Go laugh. Were you single? Come out. You'll feel better. Call 215-496-9001 or go to jenkirkman.com. Click on tour dates. Tickets are on sale now. I was once banned, and the ban has been lifted. So come see me. I've also performed there before, and I love that club. I specifically asked to come there. So you specifically come to see me. I am back for the third time at the Arlington Draft House in Virginia, right over the border of D.C., people. February 27th, Saturday, February 28th. Friday show 10:30, Saturday 7 and 10. Tickets are $22. Ooh, that's steep. Yeah, I'm fucking good, though. Call 703-486-2345 or go to jenkirkman.com. Click on tour dates. Melbourne, Australia. I'll be doing 23 performances of my stand-up show, I'm Gonna Die Alone and I Feel Fine. Go to jenkirkman.com, click on tour dates. That'll be at the Town Hall, March 20-something through April-something. How's all that sound, you guys? Pretty good, right? And support the podcast. Buy a mug, buy a t-shirt, buy a poster. Go to jenkirkman.com, click on merch. I bleed money out this thing. How, Jen? You never even do it anymore. I just don't ask, I do. All right, I hope you enjoy this episode.
I see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast.
Ah, I seem fun. The Diary of Jen Kirkman. I didn't know where I was at first, just that I woke up in your arms. And almost immediately I felt sorry, cause I didn't think this could happen again. No matter what I could do or say, just that I didn't think this could happen again. With or without my best intentions, and whatever happened to a boyfriend, the kind of guy who tried to win you over, and whatever happened to a boyfriend, the kind of guy who makes love cause he's in it.
All of this song goes out to the guy on Twitter who said stop singing. I'm gonna sing 50 songs at the beginning of this episode. That's right, you stop listening. I ain't never gonna stop singing. Yes. Bought a bed. Oh, I thought this was gonna be like the part. Oh. Where is this? Isn't she going? I can feel it in my bones. You know that part? Liz Phair.
I can feel it in my bones. I'm gonna spend another year alone.
Oh, here's another one. Replacements. I'm singing songs that are easy for my voice.
We're getting no pace. Fast as we can.
Oh, man, this isn't loud enough. Okay.
From our so-called friends, we're getting nowhere.
Quick as we know how, we go from town to town. Dream on. Bound. Hey, guy who hates me singing.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
After all this time listening to this podcast, there's still some people who give me suggestions. So go and powder your dumb little suggestion box face. Hey. I thought that was funny. It's fine if you don't. I don't care anymore. Is anyone even listening? I'm so sporadic with this. I know every week I'm going back on track. But you gotta understand what the fuck I was going to... I think I went to seven cities in 3 weeks and did 19 shows. I was finishing a book. I should show you my emails sometime. Like, it's just like, holy fuck. Like, every second, like 50 people on an email chain. And I was just like, I can't travel with my rig. I'm not going to talk into my phone. Not happening in January. But I finished my special. I taped it. And I'm done with my book pretty much. I just have the intro and the outro to write. And that's a very, like, it's almost like a personal letter. And I want to get in the right headspace. And I kind of know the day I want to write it and where I'm going to be. So I'm just making notes about what I want to say. But when the urge hits and it's time to, like, where shall I be when I write this? Like, that's what I want to do. So, and I know the perfect place where I'm going to go for the day or the night. So, hello, welcome to I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast. It doesn't matter what episode it is. It doesn't matter right now if I say it. Whew. Okay, so I'm back in Los Angeles for a while, but not really. I'm back on the road next week. I hope you'll come see me at Philly. That was already plugged. And then I'm back. And then I go to D.C. for 1 weekend, so I guess it's not that crazy of a schedule. And then in March, I'm in the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Now, I'm in the middle of another thing going on with, like, maybe there's this... there's like a few other tour dates I might do in Australia, but they may get announced and they may get taken away. Everyone calm down, but I am doing Melbourne for sure. The other dates, I've got like stuff going on in America. So it's like, I don't know. I have to see how my life shakes out, but definitely doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And then right after, the week after that is the Sydney Comedy Festival. The Sydney is more like, I do like a 7-minute spot here or there at different places. But the Melbourne is a 1-woman show, as they call it. And it's 1 hour long, and I'll be doing it at the town hall, and tickets are on sale now, which is on my website, jenkirkman.com. Scroll down to tour dates. You'll see it, or click on tour dates, scroll down. You see the poster and everything, but I'm really excited. This has been something that has been in the works for years. The wonderful, Susan, who runs the festival, had asked me to do my show last year, but I could not because of my job. And you cannot take any time off of a TV writing job except the hiatuses they give you. Luckily, my one hiatus week in March lined up with one of the weeks of the Melbourne Festival. But they don't give you a 1-woman show unless you can commit to all 3 weeks. So she put me on something else called Headliners, where I got to do a 20-minute spot with other wonderful headliners from America. Brooke Van Poplin, Seton Smith, Dave Hill, all great people, all great friends. But so I knew that I would be coming back this year to do the 1-woman show. I mean, nothing is ever written in stone, but we had softballed the conversation, and then I had my agents get on it, finalize it. But I'm really excited. So it's going to be the same name as my stand-up comedy special, which is called I'm Gonna Die Alone, parentheses, and I Feel Fine, which is a nod to the REM song, It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine. Now, already getting in fights with guys from Australia on Twitter over this title. I've already blocked one person. You'd think that someone flying around the world would be kind to everyone in that part of the world, hoping they'll make new friends to come to their show. Not me. There is a protocol for being in my fan base, and it is not to be a stupid sexist idiot. And if you are, I can't help you. So this guy wrote me, "That's bullshit. You shouldn't even be alone for a month." I'm like, okay. Do I have to dissect comedy? And when women do it for you, honey. Of course, the guy in his avatar photo was him, like, hugging his daughter. So this is someone who cannot get past that some people don't want a family and that some people don't want a husband or whatever. Now, is my life cripplingly lonely? You betcha. I am always by myself on the road. Hang out after then. Hanging out with strangers is not the opposite of loneliness, by the way. Also, hanging out with someone you shouldn't be dating or in a marriage with is not the cure for loneliness, right? You've got to surround yourself with people that understand you and that love you, and that you guys can take care of each other. However that looks to you, whether it's everyone in your apartment complex is really close, or you do the traditional marriage and kids, so who cares? I don't know. So I work on cultivating these beautiful friendships in my life so that I have a number of people I can rely on in a number of cities, states, countries, so that I am never feeling like nobody's there, because I could easily get that way with my lifestyle. But I am lucky. I have an overabundance of wonderful people in my life that I don't even have time for. Or our schedules don't always match up. So, and I have a family. So not one that I've created, but one that I was born into. So this is wonderful news. What I mean by I'm going to die alone is that we all die alone. I can't have a dream with, I can lay next to my husband in bed. Jen, did you get married? No, but I'm saying if I had a husband, I can lay next to him in bed. I cannot jump into his dreams. I cannot die with someone. They can't die with me. They can't lose consciousness, walk me to the pearly gates, and then jump back into their bodies. That's what I mean. The experience of going away, I don't know what it's going to feel like. Is it going to be whatever it is, right? We don't know. We've only heard things from people who sadly haven't, either a psychic has told you that a relative has come and told you. You may have dreamt that a relative or friend came and told you what it was like, or someone may have had a near-death experience and come back. But that's all we can go off of. So in that sense, we're all going to take that little journey alone. And in that sense, we're all terrified of that, I think, right? I think it's very scary. I put in "I feel fine" truly because I thought it was funny and because it reminded me of the REM song, which at the time came out when everybody was talking about the world ending and we were in the throes of the 90s and 2000 was looming. And it was, I remember being a crippled with anxiety about the world ending when I was little. I had the type of upbringing where it was talked about as though it was a certainty. And it didn't seem like gobbledygook cuckoo caca to me. There were times in my life when I believed that Jesus was coming back. Never mind getting into the did he even exist. Not, we're not even going there. That he was coming back and the earth would turn into a big hole and everyone who was bad would fall in it and burn in hell. And all the good people would fly up with Jesus in their clothes into the sky up to heaven. I didn't even like airplanes. You can imagine my horror at thinking that I probably was going to go with the good people, but that my reward for that was flying around with Jesus in the sky in my outfit, whatever outfit I had on that day. I mean, you lose oxygen at a certain point, people. So what are we all going to fly up with Jesus, and since he's the only one that's God, we're all going to go, "Jesus, you forgot," and we're all going to lose oxygen, and then our bodies are going to fall back to the earth and into that hole with the bad people. That's what I thought was going to happen. I was like, no one is explaining this to me. Do we turn into angels? Is it dead bodies flying up with Jesus? How does this work? Because this makes no sense. This makes even less sense than Santa. But I believed it because I was 8. And my grandmother told me that because what the fuck else did she know? So that was in my head. And, you know, as you get older, you go, I don't think I believe that anymore. Thank God I do not believe that at all. I have no anger that someone told me this. It washed away as naturally as no Santa and no Tooth Fairy did. But there's always something in the DNA of a person that's been told there's something to fear. The future is fearful. It's fear. Every unknown is fear. Every unknown should be approached with fear. There was something freeing for me about that REM song. And I'm not even a huge REM fan. May I quote one of my favorite David Spade jokes? That's right. I only know 3 REM songs, and I only like 2 of them. Don't hang out with me. I'm a nerd. I think that's funny. Now, I'm cooler than David Spade, duh. And I do like REM and understand their significance way more than he does. But I'm just saying they're not like a top 5 band for me, or top 10 even. So, but that song with its sense of humor gave me, honestly, kind of a new attitude about that stuff. Not completely, but it gave me a little window of light of like, oh yeah, I don't have to take the uncertainty of the future so seriously or think about it or whatever. So it's a significant song for me at a significant point in my life where I decided to go with the opinions of myself, go into therapy, get some things worked out, have a sense of humor if I can about certain things that we can't control. That was the beginning, step one of a 20-year journey of giving up a lot of control issues. So that's my personal inside feeling. It's also what I wanted to call my book, but I wasn't allowed to because I can see Simon & Schuster's point. That doesn't seem like a fun title. Usually if you have death in your title, it has to be a Joel Osteen book or whatever that guy's name is who's always smiling. That's like, smile when you're dying. And Jesus loves dying, smiling people. And get rich, smile, and then die or whatever. You know, usually death in the title isn't good unless it's like Tuesdays with Maury. Like, or a child is like, I died and went to heaven, and everyone eats that shit right up, you know? So that's kind of what, and the reason I wanted to call my book that is because when I told people that I didn't want children, I was shocked to find at dinner parties and other polite things that we do in society to pass the time that people would say to me, you're going to die alone if you don't have children. And that was a shocking, not revelation, like, oh, I am. I didn't think I was. No, it was a shocking thing that I thought people could talk to each other that way. And I want to let these people know, you worry about how you're going to die and whom with, and I'll worry about me. Now, my theory, and if you get my book, I Can Barely Take Care of Myself, and I think you'll love it. There's a whole chapter about my neighbor, Mrs. Stevens, who had a wonderful life with a husband and a kids and a dog named Mimi and a poodle. And she lived across the street from me, and my dad plowed her snow every time it snowed. And, you know, we took care of her as much as we could. And I used to visit her and, you know, sit with her. And her son, Brad, came by on the weekends to mow the lawn and take her grocery shopping. But that damn Mrs. Stevens changed her own light bulb one day and had a heart attack doing it. And she fell on the fucking floor and died. She died alone, and she had a child. Do you see my point? My point is, don't do silly things. I mean, having a child and getting married isn't silly, but don't list those as reasons. Don't list dying, not wanting to die alone as reasons to do such big things as that. Approach it with love, not fear. I'm getting married because I'm wildly in love, and I'd like to see this man or woman, or man, woman, or whatever, every day for the rest of my life as far as I can see. I want to be a mother or a father so badly that I want to spend my days with my kid as far as I can see. Do not say ignoramus things like, they're going to be around me when I die. You don't know that. And you don't even know if you'll want that. Because my parents and their parents were very stubborn people. My mom's mom did not want to be taken care of. No, don't let a priest come and give me communion on the weekends. I can't go to church anymore, so I'm not going to take communion. And we would explain to her, but Nana, you're allowed to have a priest come. God understands if you can't really walk that well anymore. No, he doesn't. I'm going to hell. So she'd sit in her home thinking she's going to hell, refusing a priest to come in, refusing a life alert bracelet, refusing that. She wouldn't let us take care of her. So never mind your opinion of how your life is going to look when you're 80. You don't know shit any more than I do, right? When my dad hit his head and his brain was swelling, you think any of us could take care of him? My fucking mom can't lift him. We don't know what to do. We took him to a hospital. Sure, we were lucky to be by his side, and he was lucky that we were there. But actually, he got real scared because he was in a hospital, and he opened his eyes, and his three daughters, who don't live in the same place, were standing next to him suddenly, and he looked around and saw that he was in a hospital bed, and because his brain was injured, he couldn't think straight, he didn't know what had happened, and he just started, crying, and he couldn't speak, because all he thought was, I must be dying, because my family's around me. So actually, it scared him to have us around. So don't everyone go tell everyone else how they should do whatever. So I'm going to die alone and I feel fine is a defiant thing, which is I have accepted that I don't know how I'm going to go and that it might not be a rosy bed of roses with all these people surrounding me, even if I do the stereotypical right thing of get married and have kids. And since I didn't do that, I know one way I'm not going to go, which is in a bed surrounded by my children. That's one way I'm definitely not gonna. Maybe someone else's children. Maybe who knows what. Who fucking knows, right? So, that's kind of the point of that title. It has nothing to do with being single. God, no. The other joke I have in my act is that any woman who gets married thinking, I'm gonna grow old with this man, rethink it. Men die first. And then I go into a bit about my grandmother, who was a widow for 39 years. So, everybody... Every man, so when I have a title like that I think is fucking hilarious, because it's like, what is this show about? And the show is about everything under the sun. And in the Melbourne version, it'll be a little different than my 1 hour that I do in America, because it's more one woman show-ish. So there might be some bring it down now moments where I maybe tell a sad story or something and reveal some stuff. So it'll be a little more personal than just stand up, but it'll be very funny. But now my point about that is that overall, it's a funny show. It is a comedy festival. But, you know, I like to think my Australians are a little more sophisticated. I have never met an Australian fan except this guy who I didn't like. Now, granted, I don't have enough Australian fans to meet them to, if I had more than a few hundred, then maybe it would start looking like, oh, I don't like some of these people. But so far, I've idealized the Australian folks. I haven't really been wrong yet. You're all lovely. Now, except this guy who wrote me, you should never be alone even for a month. And I went, it's a comedy title, sir. And he's like, I'm just saying, I think you're great. You'll find someone. Something in that thing. I'm like, I could be single. I was dating like a model last year and nobody knew it. And not a literal model. I still wanted to call my book, I'm Gonna Die Alone and I Feel Fine, while that was going on. So don't worry, don't read into everything. The title of the show isn't, I'm currently single and freaking out about it. That is not the title of the show. If it were, maybe you could send me a consoling tweet. But it just brought to my attention that, my God, is it hard for women in comedy? Sometimes it is. We can't even make a fucking self-deprecating joke without dudes rushing in to console us. And then you go, I was complimenting you. And I go, well, it's not that you said anything mean, but you said something that, A, was a response to a question I never asked you. It's condescending. And have you ever been sitting there in your home and a male said something like, we're all going to die alone, or I'm going to die alone, and you have ever thought to console him? Be honest with yourself. The answer is no, right? It's the same as the cat calling stuff. I'm just saying hi. How many times have you just said hi to a straight guy if you're a straight guy? The kind of hi that you're saying hi to the women. Don't bullshit me. So that's the title. I'm doing it in Australia. I hope you'll come. If I get any come to Blinken Schlonken, just listen. I'm going to two places, possibly three more. But those are not like, it's not like, oh, I wonder where in Australia I should go. It's a set thing. The places I may go after that, it's set in stone. It's a tour. I'm not 100%. I'm confirming myself for it yet, but I will be in Melbourne and Sydney. And I'm so excited. I'll be there for a month. And that's a long time to be away. But, so, Anyway, that's my point. So, anywho, so I'm back in LA. It's funny. I'm a very adaptable person. I've gotten to the point where, well, I love my apartment so much. And I was feeling kind of over it when I left for New York. And then I got back and I'm like, I love it. Like, I just love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And the life, the living is summertime. And the living is easier in LA. And I think I just need some easy right now. Easy like Sunday morning. Do I miss New York? Fuck yes. There's a lot of reasons I miss New York, and it's heartbreaking. But I'm a grown-up, and sometimes you're just not living in the right place at the right time. But there's good things to love about LA, and there's things to love about New York. And if I'm lucky, I'll get to keep going back and forth. And this year has not presented itself to me what it's going to look like yet. It's still all shaking out. So who knows? But I am not currently like trying to get out of here. And also because, duh, I won't even be here. I think what, from March 22nd till like April 19th or April 26th or something. I don't even fucking know anymore. So that's that. For those of you who don't live in Australia, that whole rant about I'm going to die alone and I feel fine is still the name of the special that I just taped. And that went well. Thank you, everyone in Austin, for coming. Thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone at the North Door, which is the venue I performed at. Thank you, Butch, for keeping up with me and making sure that I did honor my word to come back and do it there, which I, of course, always was going to. But yeah, so maybe you guys want to hear a little bit about that. So it can't be announced yet where it's going to be, but the representative of the company that it's with was there, and she's also a dear friend of mine, and she was happy with it, and everyone's happy, and everything's good. And it was directed by the amazing Lance Bangs, who, speaking of REM, directed one of their videos in the 90s, but it has done so much more than that, and is I was honored that he agreed to work on it. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting process to, like, I'm, you know, you have to, so this company gives a bunch of money, right? And then go here and make this. Now, I don't have any of the money yet. The way it works is then I have a production company, which is also my management company, and they front it and they put up money for the whole production. I mean, we're hiring a line producer that hires all the people with the cameras and the grips and the thing and the designer and the blah. I mean, like 50 jobs all being employed under this budget. And then I think I get paid when it airs or something. I don't know. I mean, it's not like I don't know, but it's being figured out. Like there's people that work on it, and I'll find out when I need to. Oh, first of all, let me explain one more thing. I know, listen, I'll stop complaining about the shit that happens to me as a woman in comedy when you guys get your heads out of your fucking asses. Not you guys listening, but seriously, like help smack other dudes up the side of the head. Because I feel like I've just been seeming like a man hater. I'm just these kinds of man's a hazer haters. Like it just, it's so maddening. So what I'm going to say is this guy in Austin wrote a listing of, you know, like a listing in the local paper of like Jen Kirkman's performing. He said all these nice compliments. Woohoo. Jen Kirkman's here. She's so funny. We're so lucky. She's taping too. If she's smart, and I know she's smart, she'll pick the best bits from each taping and make that her special. I'm like, oh my God. He just mansplained, as they say. To me, the professional of 20 years who has an enormous budget to work with it. Yeah, this is, of course, it's what I'm fucking doing, you moron. But here's the other thing. I actually didn't want to do it that way, even though I knew I had to. Like, I was hoping that one show would be so perfect that we could just use that whole thing. And it might be. I might just edit, like, a couple things, like 2 or 3 minutes here and there. It's not going to be. But anyway, it went well. So I'll start from the beginning. So maybe you'll find this interesting. Maybe you won't. It was just a lot of, like, so when I happened to be in New York, I met the woman who was going to be the line producer, and she kind of runs everything. And so I was like, yes, I want to work with you. You're great. We had a fun coffee. She's a cool chick. So she'd worked with Lance before, so they started getting busy on stuff. But I decided I wanted to film these extra things, like these scenes. So when you watch my special, hopefully if it all works out and it doesn't look bad and we decide to keep them in, there will be like a 3 to 5 minute scene. It'll open on that. Then you'll see me go into the stand-up, and then you'll see me get off stage and there's a scene. So I think I can say what it is. It just starts with me backstage, and these are all hired actors, but it's supposed to be a woman. It's supposed to be like, none of it is based on anything, but it's like a friend of mine that lives in Austin now, which I don't have any friends live in Austin, that I went to college with, who shows up with their kid. It's just to get some of that, like, to show what my life looks like in a scene of someone being like, this must be so hard. You're always alone. Come over. Like, my kid's here. And just that kind of stuff. And then, like, it's supposed to look like I'm running backstage and then get right on stage. And then that's when the special starts. Then, after it's over, you see me, like, come off the stage, and this guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, I love that bit you do about the 20-year-old drummer. I'm one as well. Can I buy you a drink? And I'm like, no, I'm done with that. That was one night. No. And then this other couple comes up to me and they complain about the show. They weren't laughing. They don't like my comedy. And these are all things that have happened to me before and after shows. Well, not the kids part, but those two. So I thought that would be funny, kind of slice of life stuff. And so they had to hire a casting director in Austin. And so for a month I had to write the scripts. And then for a month I was getting casting footage that I would watch. And it was a lot of footage because I had to cast, you know, like a child, a mom, the couple, the guy. And this casting director was very thorough. Like, I watched a lot of stuff. And it was very interesting because, so the people I ended up hiring were amazing. And everybody was such a good, I wanted people who could improvise and who would feel free to just go off script. Like, as long as we got the major beats in there that we needed, they all felt comfortable enough going off script, and they would surprise me enough that it would jolt me into having like a reaction to where I could act. And so one of my favorite moments was when I was acting with that young guy. I wanted someone that looked kind of Kurt Cobain-esque, and he kind of did. So I was like, when he says, I like older women, I'm like, oh, no. My manager and the woman that works at the company that I can't say who it is yet, they were like watching on the monitor, and they like called me over just for like a little like, hey, why don't you tell him you think he looks like Kurt Cobain? And I started getting so giggly as a person in real life that I tripped and fell down the stairs right before the next take, which will not be used because I wasn't being filmed coming down the stairs. It was just like my starting point. And so then when I said to him, you look like Kurt Cobain, like that's me as a person really saying that to a young man and getting like all flustered like a dork old lady. And then being like, oh, do you know who that is? And he's like, yeah. And it created this really great organic moment where you can see that although I am saying no, I don't want to have a drink with him, part of me is like, God, I wish I was young. And, you know, so that was really, really fun. So we filmed that. I filmed that all last Friday in Austin. But it was just like weird little things like that were a lot of work, figuring that out, like blah, 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 blah. And so, Saturday we taped the special. I did two shows. The audiences were great. It's just such a weird thing as a comic. I think it's like, you know, and I tell my manager and agent, like, don't be yes people. Don't be like, pump it up here. Like, don't be like, it's amazing. Just be normal, you know, but please tell me you thought it was funny and you liked it. And everyone was happy. And I was so psyched with the designer who designed my set, this guy, Chris Billheimer, he decided to just put this big, huge thing that said JK. And I loved it. That was not my idea. And you would think that since I always say JK Livin and my initials are JK, and I almost got a JK tattoo, or that I would have fucking thought of that. But I didn't, because I don't think that way. I'm never thinking about what things should look like. So he did, and it was amazing. And then I decided, as a tribute to Joan Rivers, to wear like a fun coat and then put it on the mic stand, which will be seen in some of the shots. So that was like my little moment. And for her, not like she would give a shit. I mean, for me as like a, you know, this was my favorite person in comedy kind of thing. So it was a lot of fun. I felt like, I'd always talked about the North Shore. The acoustics are so great. It sounds like there's all these people there, even, you know, it sounds like 3,000 and not 300. But for some reason, I felt like the second show, the audience wasn't laughing as loud. I don't know where I got that from. Everyone was like, you're nuts. But I am nuts. I'm a comedian. Like, I don't, it's weird to be taping a special, but knowing you just, like, you just want to, like, go off book and, like, make it as organic as possible. And I think I did. You know, I improvised a couple things. It was good. I don't think it'll be clear, though, what was in the moment and what wasn't. Because it's not like I was, like, doing crowd work. I talked to the crowd a little bit, but I don't know if that's going to stay in. And so it might not look good. Like, I might actually see the footage and go, oh, it doesn't look good when I talk to the crowd. So, I'll have to see. That'll be the next step is, like, edits and blah, blah, blah. But it was super fun, a great experience. And it's just, there's a lot of work that goes into it and a lot of weird little things all day that you have to do to get ready and things you have to do, you know, right when the shows end, like, you know, meet and greets or anything like that. It was busy, 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 but it was great. And I'm really honored because I can tell you that it's not with Comedy Central. And it makes me really happy because Comedy Central never liked me. And I don't know, I have the Drunk History DVDs, which if you, season one and two are on DVD, I don't get any money for it, so I'm not trying to like plug it. I mean, buy it because it's great. But the reason I mention it is because there's something on it called the Sober Reveal. So it's where Derek shows me an episode that I haven't seen yet when I'm sober. And we talked a little, and I did say this, but I don't know if it made it onto the DVD, where I said, you know, if you saw Drunk History season one on Comedy Central last year, my episode, even though it was the last one that aired, 2 years ago. I've been on seasons one and two. I forgot. Season one, my episode with Winona Ryder, Mary Dyer, and all that. That was the pilot, meaning that was the episode they shot to show Comedy Central to say, this is what an episode would look like. It was me. There were other people in it doing other stories. But I knew that Comedy Central hated me so much that I didn't want to be in the pilot. And I told Derek no, because I was afraid I would ruin it for him if they saw my face. Now, not everyone at Comedy Central hates me. There's different departments. And so that's what I think I probably wasn't clear on, is there's the department of people that give you a stand-up special, and then there's the people that do television series and all that kind of stuff. And so those people are fine with me. And they should be, because I do great work on all of their shows, like Drunk History and At Midnight. But the point about Comedy Central is, so they've never liked me. So when I was, have I told this before? I can't remember. But when I was just a kid traipsing around New York, you know, my first time on television, except for Home Movies, the cartoon show, but the first time that my face and body appeared on TV was this show called Premium Blend, which was on Comedy Central. And it was like stand-ups doing a 5-minute set. And so I lived in New York, and the two women that book Premium Blend lived in New York, and they would go to see you at every open mic and every blah, blah, blah. And they booked me. And so I go, I think I have talked about some of this before. So I go to LA, but that was, I'd flown from LA to New York before. I mean, yeah. But I was with a bunch of people at this job I had once, and it was still scary as hell, but at least I was like with people. I had never flown alone that long, and I was like 23, which is embarrassing. But so, you know, I had this horrible panic disorder, and so my doctor gave me Xanax, and it wasn't the right drug for me. Like, Klonopin's the right thing for those long flights, and now on short flights I don't even take Klonopin anymore when I fly, which is just a thing that I don't say often, because I don't want everyone like, hey, congratulations. But on longer flights, yeah, just because it's just easier to stay. Like, it's not a fear of flying. It's a you get panic attack, whatever. We've been through this. So now I didn't know what to do. So I get on the plane, and I am so scared at takeoff, because the doctor didn't say, like, take a Xanax before you get to the airport and a half of one before you get on the plane. Like, I didn't understand about keeping calm the whole time. So I started panicking on takeoff and took one, and it didn't do anything. I didn't understand. I took another, you know, and I got out of my seat and started running up the aisle on takeoff. I thought I was going to successfully ask them. I was out of my mind, not on drugs, in fear, which is more insane than probably how anyone has ever felt on a drug. Like, I was seriously thought I was going to make it to the cockpit to be like, can you please land the plane? I have to get off. Like, I don't care about premium blend. Like, I can't. And this was pre-9/11, so it wasn't as bad to do that. So the stewardess, like, grabbed me and put me back in my seat, and I explained what the fuck was happening. Well, she went back to her seat and was like, stay there. And I was like, at least that, like, first round of adrenaline went through me, so I, like, felt a little better, but I was, like, just losing it. And then she came right back to me, and I was like, panic attack, and the Xanax, and so I took another Xanax, and then there happened to be it was one of those big planes, too, where it's, like, two in aisle, three in aisle two. So she took these three armrests in a row of three, and she put them all up, and she laid me down with a blanket and a pillow in coach, and I had a stuffed duck that I bought at the airport for, I don't know, like good luck or something, and I was holding it like a baby, and she sat and like stroked my head until I fell asleep, and I woke up when the plane landed, like, what the hell happened? Like, I was so dazed. And they kind of helped me off the plane. And then I got like picked up in the Comedy Central van by some, you know, production assistant. But some of the other comics were on the flight, but I didn't know them. They were in a different genre than me and they weren't friends of mine and still aren't. And I don't even remember who was there, but so we all got in the van and I passed out. And it was one of those things where like we get dropped off at the hotel. The person driving the van like gets out, helps everyone with their suitcase. Everyone sees me just like slumped against the door. And then like finally they're like, Jen. And they woke me up. I'm like, huh? I didn't know where I was. And it all got back to the Comedy Central women. And like no one was mad or anything. Like it was fine by the next day when the performance was. But it was like this thing of like, what's wrong with her? Like, because these women are kind of like that kind of women. Like they just want to be cool. They kind of tend to like dudes more. And I think it became this thing like, oh, Jen's drunk or something. I'm like, no, I wasn't drunk. I was like, and my mother, Jennifer, this is no wonder you don't have a career and everyone else is famous. Listen, these two women have no power. You know those people who like, if you work in show business, at least you maybe shouldn't have the same job for 14 years unless you're really being a game changer in some way, but they're not. So it's like, trust me. Years later, I ended up seeing one of them in the snow crying outside a Saturday Night Live party because she couldn't get in, and it was the greatest night of my life. And she was drunk. That's the irony, is one of these women likes to drink as much as anyone else would at a party, I should say. But so one year, every year I would try to get a Comedy Central half hour because that was like you do premium blend, and then you get a Comedy Central half hour, and then you move up to an hour, and blah, 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 blah. So when I finally signed with the manager who I'm with now, who I've been with for 8 years, all my managers before that were like, gonna get you a half hour, gonna do it. And they never could. And they would be so confident that they could, like, no one's ever said no to me, that when I would be like, well, why did they say no? They'd be like, I don't know, they already booked them. And they wouldn't answer me. And then finally, the reason I always tell my manager, I will never leave her, is she said, they just don't think you're funny. And so fuck them. And I was like, yes, dude. So I could stop the horror every year of having to put a half hour on tape and send it to them. And so finally, you know, like this year when it's like, okay, I'm not a loser, finally in their eyes. I mean, these women have tortured me for years, not letting me on certain shows. Like they also used to be in charge of John Oliver's stand-up show. And he had to call them and be like, let Jen on the show. And they were like, ugh. Like it's his fucking show. So, yeah. That's one of my favorite. I swear I've told this, but like I'm feeling uncomfortable, so I feel like I didn't. But yeah, so they never gave me an hour or anything. Then I started to think, well, wait a minute, what do I want? And I thought, wait a minute. This is like 2 years ago. I'm like, I don't want to do an hour with them because they edit it. It has commercials. You can't say swears. And they have final say over the edit, which is insane. And they always do it in some big theater where it's like sweeping shots of thousands of people and it's paid audience. And it's like, why would anyone do that? I don't get it. But I think you do it when you don't have some of the options that I have. And I knew that this thing was going to be happening for a year. It's been being in the works. So I was like, yes. So I'm just grateful that it's not with them. And it's kind of a happy ending for all of the people that worked on it, because we've all been together. The woman who is part of the company that it's with, and then my manager and me, we've all known each other for like 8 years. And we're like, this is so great. We all finally get to work together in something. And we're not at the mercy of Comedy fucking Central, the stand-up department. Probably said too much. That's fine. Oh my God, there's three soldiers breaking into my apartment. So I have an update. What's my neighbor's name again? Andy? I feel like I haven't seen him in 1 year. It's been more than a year. Literally haven't run into him in 1 year. That's why I've had no updates. So today I'm home, which is like the first time I've been home for an afternoon on a weekday since October. So I'm inside and I'm trying to get work done and do stuff. And there's this loud music, like crazy loud, like it's thumping on my floor. And I'm banging on the floor because I think it's someone downstairs, but this building's too big, I think, for them to hear me banging on the floor. And then I go outside on my patio, and it kind of sounds like it might be the building across the street, like across the driveway, reverberating into my place. It's hard to tell. And so I was pacing up and down my hall, like trying to figure out where the music was coming from, looking over the... So I was going to get in the elevator and go to the floor below me to see if it was the same apartment but one floor below. So I walk out my door, and I'm walking down the hall. I'm like talking to myself, like, what the fucking music? What the fuck? And I hear Andy coming out of his door. And I know, okay, if I keep walking, we're going to take the elevator together. So I'm just going to turn around, and I'm going to have to suck it up because I'm like Pac-Man now. I'm trapped by the two ghosts. I cannot wiggle out of here and go out the side door because there isn't one. So I turn around and he's coming towards me. Now he's not saying anything. He just has a big grin on his face. I feel like, and I'm projecting, the grin on his face is like, well, you knew this day would happen and I've been listening to your podcast and ha 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 ha. And so I go, fucking, who's playing this loud music? Do you know? And he goes, I don't hear music. I go, I hear it at my place. It's making me fucking mental. And now I'm the crazy person roaming up and down the hall. He goes, ha, ha, ha. And then I go in my apartment and shut the door. 2 hours go by. I'm like, it's still going on. I've lost my mind at this point. So I go, okay, I'm going to go back in the hall. So I go back down the hall. I'm going to go to the third floor this time. So I start walking down the hall towards the elevator. And then I hear a bing. And I hear the elevator's open. And Andy's coming out of the elevators and walking towards me. I'm Pac-Man again. So I turn around. And he doesn't see me turn around. I turn around and I start walking back towards my door. And he's behind me going, have you figured out where the music's coming from? I go, I think it's the third floor. He goes, well, have you gone down there? I go, no, I don't feel like it. I go, it's fine. I'll just deal with it. And then he just laughs, ha, ha, ha. And I shut my door. And I'm like, I'm a loser. And then I come in here and start singing at the top of my lungs. So he's probably outside like, this girl is insane. But I kind of love that maybe I've scared the guy that has scared me for so long. I made notes of what to say on this podcast. So far, I'm sure it's been a thrill a minute. Oh my God, I have like 90 texts. Okay. Let's see. Pod. Okay. Oh, I want to talk about this, but I don't think I should. Oh, I want to thank, I don't think I'll talk about that yet. My friend tried to set me up with someone and it's just not a good time for me. It's not going to work out, but I don't want to get into that story because I always like to process things for a while before never mind. Ixnay that. We'll talk about that at some point. I was on The View, which was crazy, craziness, crazy time. I don't know what I can and cannot say. It was just such a great experience. It was really like they, you know, when you're not, I'm not a guest on it. I was acting as a replacement for someone one day. So you get thrown right into it. You know, you get there, you're in the morning meeting. All the producers have, it's very similar to Chelsea Lately. All the producers, well, with the exception of the writers would find the stories on Chelsea Lately, but there was a different team of people at the View who would find the stories. We'd all go through and decide what ones we want. Whoopi's kind of the ringleader. And I was so excited to meet her. Like, I was flipping out. And my dad loves Whoopi Goldberg. He was, like, flipping out because, you know, her, she'd been out because of her back. And he was like, oh, geez, you're not going to get to be on with Whoopi? I'm like, I don't know. I think she's coming back, but her back's been fucked up. And he's like, Whoopi Goldberg is my favorite. I love her. She got robbed for the Oscar for Ghost. She should have gotten the Oscar for Ghost. I go, I had no idea you loved Whoopi Goldberg this much. My dad goes, you never asked. So I say to all children, ask, talk to your parents. Get to know them. Life is short. Ask your dad his thoughts on Whoopi Goldberg. So I didn't know that she was my dad's favorite. I don't know what, actress, comedian. But he likes female comics. So I mean, I guess I'm not surprised, but who knows anymore, right? So, but yeah, so Whoopi was kind of leading things. She hadn't been back, so we came out, and I didn't watch it. So I don't know if this part was on tape, but the audience was like, Whoopi, Whoopi, and they were like going fucking apeshit for her. And so, so backstage we had talked about, you know, some of the stuff we were going to talk about, which was like, we were going to show a clip of, the president, when he said that thing at the State of the Union, which was like, yeah, I got voted for twice, like that kind of smackdown that really wasn't one. And then the rebuttal, and the lady to me looked like she had like a weird wig on or something. So, but Whoopi was on like a tear kind of and talking about like the woman's rebuttal. I don't know if you, it's the Republican rebuttal was this woman. I forget her name. I'm sure she's another like Sarah Palin-esque like dummy, but she was telling a story of putting bread bags on her shoes growing up because they were poor and this and that. So obviously, I don't want to make fun of that because I know that's a real thing and all that stuff. But my thing that I wanted to address was, why do we even have to have rebuttals like right after the State of the Union? Like whoever's president, they get to give their State of the Union. They are president for whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, right? If you want to have a rebuttal, then maybe all the news shows can have, you know, the Republicans or the Democrats, whoever the opposite of the president's party is doing things. But the fact that they show a rebuttal right after, I don't care if you're saying like the most awesome, smart thing. It just looks dumb. It looks like, and now I'm going to say some things. But what it really is an audition to maybe be seen as like a viable, you know, presidential candidate someday or leader of your party or something. So it's this weird thing where they can't totally rebut like everything the president said. And so then they tell personal stories and it just seems weird. Like just the whole thing seems stupid. And I hate when any politician like panders to America, like they grew up without any money. Like that's great and all, but our government is so corrupt in my opinion and is so owned by Wall Street and lobbyists that whether or not you grew up poor, you really probably aren't still going to be able to help poor people once you get in office. And so who cares? Whatever. I just have a very like cynical view of it all. And, but that wasn't what I was going to say on The View. I was just going to say the whole concept, you know, of a rebuttal is weird. But then I got like, not afraid to say it, but Whoopi was like, went into some thing that she didn't tell us she was going to, not that she has to. And the audience was so like into her, Whoopi, that the stand-up in me was like, I'm going to appeal to this audience and not the home audience. Now in Chelsea Lately, the studio audience was always a little younger and maybe a little less sophisticated than our home audience. So a lot of my jokes on Chelsea Lately would not land in the studio audience. It wouldn't be this huge laughter applause, but I knew I'm going to get tweets about that joke tonight from adults. And I was always right. So there are two audiences that you're playing to. But when you're a guest on The View and you're in Whoopi's house, I didn't want to go against her in front of the audience, even though I know that's what The View is all about. But no, I don't think when you're the day player. So I didn't. But I had a little earpiece in. And the producers were like, feel free to interrupt, feel free to interrupt. And I'm like, I am not fucking interrupting her thing that the audience is into to be like, whatever, Whoopi, who cares about this woman's dumb poverty story? I think she looks like she's wearing a wig. And so I still did manage to shout out, she looks like she's wearing a wig. And it got picked up on some like right-wing websites and everyone was like, what a bitch she is. And I'm like, she looks like she's wearing a wig. That's not a political opinion. I would say that if a Democrat looked like they're wearing a wig, and I promise you, I promise my listeners that I will stay neutral in this fight to see who in our government looks like they're wearing wigs. I promise I will not hold back if it's a liberal that I like. And by the way, liberal and Democrat are two different things, which is why I do not call myself a Democrat. So anyway, so everyone was ah, blah, 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 on those websites, but it didn't matter. I thought it was funny. But nothing really came of it. It wasn't like there wasn't an audition to replace anybody, as far as I know. If it was, no one told me. But I don't think it was. But it was still a wonderful experience. It was totally surreal, yet felt totally normal because I'm used to being on those kind of panel shows. And Rosie O'Donnell is a lovely person. She made me feel so comfortable and was like talking comedy and showing me pictures of her kids and apologizing for showing me pictures of her kids, going, I know you don't even care about this. But she was super nice. And everyone there was nice and makes you feel at home. And they treat you like, No, just like, cause you know, everything wants like ratings. So I think they're like, yeah, just come in here and say whatever, like, don't be polite. But I was not going to be the one that was just going to like yell something crazy. Like 9/11 was an inside job. Like, you know, remember Rosie O'Donnell did that once. Like that's not my place. I feel like as the guest to be screaming things. So I didn't, not that I had anything to say, but, and I got out everything that was on my mind. But, yeah, I wasn't going to go for controversy. That's just not what I'm like, unless it's organic. So I am late for a physical therapy session, torn rotator cuff. Not to brag, you guys, not to brag. Okay, so those are my stories this week. They're really boring. See, I have no life. Like, I wish I'll tell you about the date thing another time. It's just kind of like, I'm just kind of in this quandary in my life where I'm just kind of I'm in like relationship rehab in my therapy. Like I'm not allowed to ask anyone out, even if it seems like this person's in love with me. And we're hanging all the time. I'm not allowed to say like, what's going on here? I'm not allowed to. And it's maddening. And so my friend, to get my mind off things, was like, why don't I set you up with my friend? And you can forget about this other thing you have going on. And I'm like, okay. And then I was like, I can't. Like, I went out one date and I'm realizing, like, I can talk to anybody because I interview people when I talk to them. But I'm really interested, especially if they have, like, one thing we can connect on. And this guy's really nice, but I don't know. I just don't think I'm in a... Also, I'm not even in a place. Forget what emotional place I'm in. I'm not even in the place I live. So unless someone wants a girlfriend that... leaves the country for a month, and most people don't want that, I'm realizing. I think that's all I'm going to say about that, but I feel like I have to be better at, if I know I'm in on something that I don't think is going to last long term, like I think, well, let's just have a fun night out and chat for hours, but I think I have to be more like kind of turn into like a cuntaloo face and be like, all right, I got to go. Like, because now I don't know how to, ugh, it's so bad. Oh God, I don't have any idea if this person listens to the podcast. I doubt it. I fucking hope not. Well, I would hate, whatever. Anyway, I gotta go to physical therapy. Torn rotator cuff. How do you know? I don't. They might have to MRI it. Oh my God. Okay. Oh, I had a story about a guy at the airport that I got in a big fight with, but I feel like I already mail-bashed a little bit in this episode, so we'll save him for next week. I love you guys. You're all the best. I think that's it. Shout out to splitsider.com and laughspin.com. They both did some interviews with me recently that I really enjoyed because I wasn't asked, were you really drunk on Drunk History? And I wasn't asked, what do you think Chelsea's doing with her Netflix show? Like, I don't know. So check those articles out if you want to, I don't know, probably read shit you already know. And then that's it. I promise to be back. And we're going to do some listener email stuff. I just, the people that were working on it for me for a while were not, so I'm going to get back to that. I don't even have the emails, so we're going to get back to that. And, okay, that's it. Oh, God, this is the worst episode ever. Okay, until next week, have fun.